I'm going to turn the meeting over to Elaine to introduce our speaker and go from there. All yours, Elaine.
Thank you, Jay. Addict gratefully recovering. My name is Elaine. And
Hey, Elaine.
hi,
Hi, Elaine.
everybody. Do you
Hi.
know, I was so stressed. I'm always so stressed when this comes, when I have to speak up. And now that I'm connecting with the fact that, I'm going to introduce this person that in my recovery is such a wonderful, like glowing sunshine of recovery. I'm gonna make myself cry, but she's such an example to me in my recovery. I've known her since nearly a year now, and I can count on her so much, and she's always available, really, in sometimes not in the very second, but she's always available. She'll never ignore a message, or she'll always be available to not just give me a yes no answer, but to come back with real, stuff that I can relate to and that gets me to think and that. Yeah, I'm lacking the words just to express how well, first of all, that person has what I want in recovery. I found her so inspiring, and also. Yeah, like I say, like she's one of my recovery pillars. So, with no further ado, I would like to introduce Reese to come and share with us her experience, strength, and hope. Thank you, Reese.
Thank you,
Thank
Elaine.
you. Hello.
Hi, everyone. My name's Reese and I'm an addict.
Hello,
Hi,
Reese.
Reese.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Reese.
Hey, Reese.
Lovely. Hi, Reese.
It's so lovely to be here this evening. Thank you so much to Elaine for asking me to share and for that introduction. You know, it just makes me think about how NA speaks through us even when we don't realize. You know, even when we're concerned that our program is flawed or limited or not enough, NA still speaks through us if we let it. And that's a wonderful sort of thought for me to hang on to. I want to pause for a second to thank the Highlands and Islands area. You guys have been making meetings accessible well before the rest of the world clocked onto the fact that this was a cracking idea. And I am so very grateful for the service that you all do in carrying the message and have done for such a long time and continue to do. I haven't been asked to do a share. I haven't been asked to do a long share in a bloody long time. And I had a moment today, and I said to my husband, "Fuck, what am I going to talk about?" And he's like, "You'll be right. You can talk for hours." And I was like, "Okay, great, thank you." he's like, "Just tell them how amazing your husband is." Again, also useful information. And yet, if nothing else, that is a gift of recovery. You know, the relationships that I get to have in recovery, the relationships that I've managed to maintain because of my program, to repair or to heal or to develop. You know, because of my program, you know, all humor aside, it's nice to every now and then pause and remember that. You know, because relationships have never been something that make a lot of sense to me. They were something to perform when I was growing up. You know, love was something you bought with good behavior. And you know, I feel like I kind of have to just qualify that with the fact that my parents were probably bloody horrified to think that. You know, they're not fucking appalling people, although they've had moments. I might get to it, I might not. But they loved us. They definitely loved us, and they definitely did their best to parent us. And yet, somehow, I came out of that thinking that unless I was perfect, and unless I was compliant, and unless I was a very, very, very good girl, I wouldn't be able to take up space. You know, and I was a super, super sensitive kid, super sensitive adult. I still am, you know. So sensitive. And it's almost like I reached a tipping point when Compliance no longer felt like a good idea, you know. I had my first panic attack when I was 10 years old, and I didn't know it was a panic attack. I thought it was my conscience. Hello, religious background. I thought it was my conscience telling me that I was very, very bad. I was 10. And I couldn't sleep because I was thinking about all the really, really evil and sinful things I've done in my life. I'll repeat, I was fucking 10. And because the explanation that my conscience was bothering me was plausible, I didn't get any support for the fact that I was having panic attacks. And you know, I remember over the years I'd always have trouble sleeping, and again I thought that was my conscience. I now know that was fucking ADHD, but hey, I thought it was my conscience. And so I got to about 16 or 17 and just went, you know what, fuck this, I'm never going to be good, I might as well be bad. I didn't, you know, dive off the deep end straight away. I was way too compliant and just not that interesting. But I do remember making a conscious decision that I couldn't keep trying to be good all the time. And I didn't, you know, I didn't understand it. I didn't understand what I was trying to do there. I just knew it hurt too much. And you know, when things hurt too much, what do? We avoid them. We get away from them. We find something to replace them. You know, I grew up reading voraciously. That was my escape. Constantly fantasizing about not being me, anything but me, because me just wasn't right. You know, I was too loud, too over the top, too aggressive, too sensitive, too dramatic, too silly, too embarrassing, you know, and so on and so on and so on. And I feel like it's useful to share this, first of all, because it's my fucking story, so what else am I going to share? But secondly, because, you know, I came to NA when I was 37. 37? Yeah. Could have fucking done with NA many, many, many years earlier. But I didn't fit what I thought NA was. You know, it didn't make sense in my head. I was separating myself from drug addicts that I, you know, could see in my head as a typical drug addict, as if I fucking knew what that was. And I just didn't think there was a place for me, you know. So it was that too much and not enough dichotomy again that I grew up with, you know, too much of everything but never enough. You know, I take too much drugs to live a normal fucking life, but not enough to qualify for NA, you know. Which of course is nonsense. And I share this because I know I'm not the only one that feels this way. I know I'm not the only one that's experienced something like this. You know, some sort of ability to manage the unmanageability, to hide the insanity long enough to just keep the fucking torture going, you know. And that was my experience. You know, I used to use shame as a motivator, and was very, very good at forcing myself to do things for periods of time, so I could force myself to mask and not show the world who I really was. I could force myself to pretend I wasn't sensitive. You know, I spent years working in hospitality and being, you know, the filthiest and most aggressive person in the kitchen, thinking that that was the way to, you know, take up the right amount of space. Yeah. Forcing myself to not use for periods of time. But I didn't do anything to fix the underlying spiritual void. And I didn't know I had an underlying spiritual void. You know, I used to get clean for ages, and then I'd be furious with myself that I just couldn't maintain it, that I couldn't be consistent. You know, it was this moral failing, this weakness, you know, that I just couldn't stay clean, that I just couldn't have a life like other people do. I just couldn't be fucking normal, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But because I could force myself to do it for periods of time, because my self-will is so fucking hardcore, I prolong the agony. I stretched out that rock bottom, and denial is fucking strong for me as well. And I was very good at telling myself it's not that bad, not that bad, it's not that crazy, it's not that big a deal. You didn't make that much of a dick of yourself. It's okay. And so it went on and on. I first got clean because I didn't start really using. God, 16, 17, 18, and I didn't really start using anything other than alcohol until I was in my very early 20s, 20, 21 kind of thing. But I just, I do everything thoroughly and rapidly. and so I went from, this seems like an vaguely okay. No, this something seems like something I would never do, to this something seems like something a vaguely okay idea, to this seems like something I'm doing every fucking day, very quickly. And I got clean when I was 28, because my life was completely unmanageable. And I remember I tried about 3 months earlier and I couldn't leave the house for a week. I was exhausted. I was agoraphobic, like I was a fucking mess. And sorry, that's stigmatizing something that I know nothing about. I was a fucking mess. I couldn't leave my house for a week. And then it got a little bit better and then I did it again, But 3 months later I stopped and I knew I'd feel like shit, so I just kept going. Just kept working through it, And I got clean and unfortunately got congratulated for my magnificent self-will and determination in getting clean. I learned some stuff. Bit of psychiatry, certainly no fucking religion. I learned some stuff. I was certainly more manageable. Not on my drug of choice. But, life happens. Life's difficult sometimes. And I just went back again. As we do when we don't actually find something to fill that spiritual void. So I did most of my using in Australia. And then I used in the UK for a couple of years before I got clean. I moved to Australia when I was about 34, 33, 34. Then was back, used a little bit, was back home in Australia for 16 months and then moved back here when I was 36, and then literally behaved as if I was being forced to be here rather than I've made a fucking choice. I've made a choice to fall in love with a man who had a fucking 11-year-old daughter. Hence, we live in the UK. And I was behaving as if I needed some sort of special fucking congratulations for that. Everybody be impressed. Look at what I'm sacrificing living in the fucking UK instead of Australia. Which gave me the right, in my mind, to behave very badly. And I did. But I got clean in 2015. Got clean on February 22nd in 2015, when I took myself to my second NA meeting. So I used to work with a guy, and I was having one of those conversations where you don't really say what you're thinking and just saying, yeah, I had a bit of a big weekend, I should probably be careful. And he held a red key ring over the partition between our desks and he said, this has saved my life, I can take you if you like. And he took me to my first meeting and I thought it was brilliant, wonderful and amazing and wanted to tell you exactly what I thought about it. And how I thought it applied to me and what I thought I'd do, and proceeded to, still use for another 3 months. But I took myself to my first NA meeting on the 22nd of February, 2015. And I remember sitting in that meeting, sobbing my heart out, just so overwhelmed and so emotional. And surrender always brings me to tears, always, When I finally actually manage to tell the truth, it always brings me to tears. I get to tell the truth a lot in recovery. I think I do it most of the fucking time these days. But it was so foreign to me to actually tell the truth about what scared me, about how I was feeling, about what I needed. It was so foreign to me to actually be me. And I sat in that meeting and I sobbed and I said, I thought I could do it, but I can't. And I need your help. And I need it to be okay that I need your help. And when I think back to that phrase now, I think, well, why wouldn't it fucking be okay to need somebody's help? It's the way the world works. But it did not work that way in my mind. When I came to recovery, I was absolutely convinced that the only way to be a functioning adult human being was if I was able to be completely self-sufficient. I had to be able to do it myself. And if I didn't, I was failing. And so surrender makes so much fucking sense to me. I can pinpoint exactly what it feels like. And I get to do it again and again now when things come up that I realize I'm hanging on to too fucking tightly. Whenever it feels like I'm not doing something intentionally, I realize, fuck, that's self-will, And I run around like a fucking headless chook, completely acting on impulsive behavior when I don't pause. I can still do that. Of course, I can still do that. When I don't pause, when I don't try and listen to the universe and figure out what direction is the next right thing, what rather than forcing and forcing and forcing. And over time in recovery and through working the steps and through listening to people talk about how this program works for them, I've, developed some level of competency at noticing, when I'm in that hamster wheel, at noticing when all I need to fucking do is stop for a second, connect, meditate, pray. And I pray, of course, I fucking pray. I don't pray to a god because I'm an atheist, but I pray because that's how I connect with the universe. That's how I figure out what the next right thing to do is. And I, when I first came into recovery, I was determined to be able to create an intellectual construct that was my higher power that was acceptable to me. And I didn't and couldn't, and that's fine. Why would I try to limit something by attempting to understand it or define it, This program is my higher power. The love of every addict in the fucking world that wants me, every addict in recovery, excuse me, in the fucking world that wants me to be clean, that wants me to stay clean, that wants me to get this program. That love is my higher power. And I have faith that as long as I connect with that higher power, I will manage to continue to work this program, to continue to surrender to it when I need to, to continue to connect with what life can be, rather than limiting myself as I was, in my act of addiction, And I love it even when. So I was the kind of person that would literally say to people, "How do you pray? What do you pray?" Because I need an example. Yeah, I don't do fluffy. I do direct. I need an example. How do you pray? And having someone say something to me like, you know, she, this one stuck with me for fucking years. God, she was wonderful. She, I knew very, very early recovery, and she's not with us in the rooms anymore. But I remember her saying that when she was driving, she would open the window and she would shout out the window, "I can't fucking do this. I don't know what to do, so I'm handing it over to you. No doubt you'll let me know the right thing to do in your own time." And I said to her, "Who are you fucking talking to?" And she goes, "I don't know, and it doesn't matter." You know. And it's still such a habit with me that when my head is racing and it's just too hard, I just crack the window. Just crack the window as I'm driving, and it just reminds me to just chuck it out the window and let the universe figure it out, because it is beyond my capabilities, and that is okay. And so, you know, that's something I've developed over time. I was so stubborn about a higher power early. You know, it was something passive. It was never something that was actually going to talk back to me. You're fucking kidding me. But that's, you know, you get through each of the God steps, and over time it develops. You know, 11 made a massive difference for me. You know, help me understand how I'm going to start internalizing these steps, how I'm going to practice internalizing these steps, so that the next right thing becomes muscle memory rather than a fight each time. So yeah, I'm sure somebody's going to give me a time card at some stage, because I haven't been keeping an eye on it. I've got no idea what time we started. So I remember my first few years in recovery, and I went to meetings, and I went to events, and I went to meetings in other towns, and I was constantly on the go with people that I knew in the local fellowship. And I started doing service as quickly as possible, because I thought, this is something tangible that I can do. So it's fucking sitting quietly and writing on my steps, but fuck if I was going to crack on with that. And so I started doing a lot of service, and I learned so much during service, so much. And it has been something that has kept me in the middle of the boat when I could have easily drifted away. But also, you know, it's been something that I've had to do some work around. You know, I got to a stage where I realized, I say I realized, it was very explicitly and specifically pointed out to me, that I had a service-based recovery rather than doing recovery-based service. You know, because all of our defects thrive when we are doing a service-based when we're doing service-based recovery. And it hurts, and it's hard. And so, you know, I'm still screwing things up and stumbling and learning, and that's cool. That's what service is for. But yeah, it was only when I realized that I needed to take a break and concentrate on working my steps and concentrate on working on my recovery, that I really feel like I started to make some headway. And that was the start of the pandemic. You know, it took me that long to really engage with this program. I was engaging with the fellowship. I was engaging with meetings. I was staying clean. I could talk a reasonably good game. I got good memory. You say something profound, I can fucking parrot it back. But to actually start to work the steps in a way that was connecting with them, and bringing them into my life and living them as I was working them, you know, it took me a while. It took me a long time. And I think it's because I, you know, I was a kid that always did well in school because I was a bit of a fucking people pleaser and a bit of a Lisa Simpson, and so I thought that this would be like that too. I'm going to be the best NA girl in the world. You watch. I smash these steps. No, they require actual fucking effort and actual fucking, personal like inquiry and self-awareness. And it took me a while. It took me a while. I'm an addict. I want the reward without the effort. And one of the things I love about NA is that we don't judge each other for that. If all I was capable of was, NA light, skimming the surface, that's cool. I was still welcomed into the room with open arms. I was still shown love. I was still ticking along clean. And people who've been around for a while and see this happen again and again, it's just like, just keep coming, it'll sink in. And so keep coming back applies as much, to me today as it did to me on day one or day two or day 10. Because my mind is slow to open up. But the seeds that you all keep planting, slowly work their way. Slowly work their way to the light. Not too fanciful. But I'm definitely the kind of person who will often find myself in a situation where I'll say to someone, fuck, you were right. All that time you were right. So many times you said that to a sponsor, you were right. But I give myself grace because I get there in the end. Even if I don't hear something the first time it's suggested to me, that's okay. I will hear it eventually. Generally when I most need it. Often when I'm working with a sponsor or a newcomer, I'll hear something coming out of my mouth and it's just like, fucking hell, that's good. I need to remember that because I need that. And that's one of the things that I love about that kind of service, and that kind of engagement with the program. When we get to work with newcomers, when we get to work with our sponsees, we get to often, it's been my experience, I get to hear what I needed to hear. And I've got no idea where it came from. Oh, sorry, no idea where it came from. It came from fucking NA. Or it came from my higher power. One and the same anyway. But it doesn't feel like it's something that I consciously decided to say. But that's the thing again, I don't have good things to say. I carry a message and I hope the right message comes through. I hope a good message comes through. And can be filtered out from, whatever nonsense I'm adding to it. But it's not my message. And that's why I also love, when someone says something that makes so much sense to me, I'll just grab it. I'll use that. Because we're all sharing the same thing. And that's totally the way that this works. I just wanted to go back on service again, if I can. I've done a lot of service over the years, both, before I probably should. And then when I actually had something to give, and service has kept me clean, and service has kept me connected. I find connecting with people really tricky, but I find it really easy to connect with people when we've got a specific reason to be talking to each other, So I have developed amazing friendships in service. And these people call me out when I need it, and I love that. And I've learned about the program, and I've learned about myself, and I've learned about how to. I've learned so much about humility, and I'm so grateful for that in doing service. I've learned that I don't need to be ashamed of getting confused or heading off track or doing something that maybe doesn't quite align with our traditions and our concepts, because we're in service to learn and to keep learning and to be curious about it. I get really frustrated when I sometimes see service bodies operating in this kind of, there is a right and there is a wrong, and it's shameful to get it wrong mentality. And that, that comes from the people involved, and that's all of us. That's our old shit that's coming, rearing its head. We feel safety in concrete right and wrong, But to really grow together in service, got to be so fucking willing to get it wrong and have another go. Ask somebody else, seek experience from someone who's done it before. Check the traditions again, check the concepts again, check the guidelines again, talk about it a bit more, And that's bloody hard because most addicts, and certainly me, I hate being that vulnerable. I spent years never willing to show anyone that I didn't know exactly what I was doing, or trying to pretend, you know how it is. I heard someone share once that one of the things, or quite recently, one of the things that she is really proud that she's able to, do in service is to create service bodies that are safe places for people who are new in service to fuck up. And I just thought, fuck, I aspire to that. Like, that is just amazing. To be part of a service body that is such a safe place that people can just try and feel so safe about it not being a problem. To get the wrong end of the stick or go off in the wrong end of the direction or whatever, I thought, yeah, that's the kind of NA I want to belong to, where it, feels so safe for all of us to just keep trying and to just keep giving it a go. Because the old addict me, will take a set of fucking guidelines and will beat you in the fucking face with them like they're a baseball bat. And I have to be super careful to check myself and just go, no. I don't have to be right. I have to contribute to a conscience. And that's a very, very different thing. It's interesting. I've over the years found a lot of things that I've learned in, therapy or coaching or something like that, that I can go, yeah, actually, I already learned that in NA. You guys stealing again. It's like, no, we already learned that one. And letting go of the outcome is one that I return to again and again, because it just makes me feel so calm and so safe. I'm going to connect with my higher power, and I'm going to try and figure out what the next right thing to do is. And then I'm going to do that wholeheartedly, because I'm worrying about my intentions and my behaviors and my actions. Yeah. So I'm going to do my best to do the next right thing. And whatever fucking happens after that, I cannot control and should not control. I had something come up recently that was quite an interesting one for me, and almost a little bit of a test, because it helped me see what I've learned, and what this program has given me. So my mother-in-law died about 2.5 years ago, and she died suddenly going downhill after an operation. At the time, I got my fucking cape on, and I saved everybody by doing all of the, the admin and the estate stuff and everything, One of the things that came out of that anyway was that after some discussion, the decision was made to to pursue an inquiry into whether or not there was negligence that caused her death. And again, me saving the day, I was the one that was going to be communicating with a lawyer and all that sort of thing. So anyway, last week something came up that I happened to read in the middle of my work day. Never check your personal emails while you're at work. That effectively said that it was the finding of the medical expert involved in this that you know, whilst there was no negligence in the perforation, there was negligence in the fact that it wasn't discovered and fixed immediately, and as that's what led to her death. You know, if it had been discovered and fixed immediately, she wouldn't have died. And so, you know, I'm sitting there reading this. Have I read that right? Have I read that right? Have I read that right? You know, because what it basically said to me in, you know, my sort of most distill it down to the smallest thing was my mother-in-law should not have died. And I went straight into my first thing was to go straight into that old school addict behavior of saving the universe. And I thought, I can't tell my husband. It's going to hurt him so much. This is going to bring everything up for him. I can't let him know that. This is so hurtful. He'll never be able to accept it if he knows this. This is dreadful. You know, I don't think I should tell him. And maybe that's my role, you know, and I can carry this for them. Maybe that's what I can do. You know, you fucking hero. Fortunately, recovery has given me the ability to hear myself when I'm being a wanker. And I heard that and went, oh, hang on a minute. Wait, let's pull back a bit from this one because I don't have the right to decide whether or not somebody else is ready to hear something. I don't have the right to decide whether or not somebody is ready to feel something. You know, this might be the most fucking healing thing that could happen for my husband, and I'm about to deny it to him. Because I think it's going to hurt him too much. I think he can't handle it. I don't get to make those decisions. And, you know, I spoke to my sponsor about it afterwards to check in. But I didn't need to from the sense of knowing if I'd made the right decision because it just felt so right. You know, this program's given me the ability to feel that level of serenity when I know that what I'm doing is the right thing for me to do and is the right thing. You know, and is not self-will, and is not trying to mess with the universe, you know. And it felt right, that peace when decisions made, you know, it felt right. And that's just one of the many reasons why I'm so grateful to this program, and so grateful to this fellowship. You know, I've got to grow. I've got to grow at my own pace as well, you know, and I've got to grow into someone that's capable of having relationships with people, that's capable of fucking it up and trying again, you know. But, you know, the humility that we get to learn in this program. You know, I get to not just understand my faults, but also my assets. You know, I've gone from someone who was both convinced simultaneously that I was the worst person in the world and fucking awesome, to someone who can, you know, I can right size myself. And I can know that I'm all right, I'm mean. I'm just the right size for this world. And that's cool. I was planning today to go to another recovery celebration next year. I was so fucking lucky to go to the World Convention this year. I'm planning on going to the European Convention next year. And, you know, just sort of starting to look into that. And figure it out. And every time I go to a fucking convention, it's almost like, dude, seriously, you're supposed to go to the fucking meetings because I end up in service. So this time, I'm going to go to meeting. Okay, let me try and get current. Let's think if there's anything to be shared about how I'm acting out at the moment. You know, I'm doing some study at the moment. and I'm finding commitment to the study really, really challenging. I'm finding committing the time really, really difficult. And I keep finding myself in fear. Fear that I'm going to get it wrong. Projecting then, if you get this wrong, people will know you're stupid and you'll never get, the job that you need, and you're gonna, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'm trapping myself in this insane sort of, what next, what next, what next? And I have been trying to work my program around this, and I'm not getting it right. I don't feel like I'm making any headway, on this one, And so I guess, yeah, this is me sharing. I don't know. I don't get it. I don't get where I'm going wrong here. I don't get how to fix it. I'm not fix it, sorry. I don't get how to sort of realign in a way that will let me give myself the gift of commitment or attention or time or whatever it is that I need to be doing. I don't know how to get out of my own way, but I also don't know how to surrender this. So yeah, I was always the kind of person who would tell you I had a problem when I already had the solution, and I've learned in a way to not do that. So I'm here saying this is my problem, and I don't know. I don't know how I'm going to get some growth with this one. I don't know. Because it feels like there's an element of just force it. You just have to just get on with it. And so I don't know. I'm not quite sure. I've been talking for a really, really fucking long time, and I have no idea whether or not I'm going to get a timer or not, but I feel like I've run out of steam. And so I am going to leave it there. All it ever feels like I need to finish on is just fucking give this a chance. Just give this a chance if you're new, or even if you've been around forever and you're stuck in something really difficult. Just give this a chance. Let it work in your life. My life is so much better when I manage to get out of my own way and let this program work. And I am forever fucking grateful that I was brought to this fellowship and got this opportunity. And I'm going to leave it there. Thanks a lot.